5 weeks ago, I didn't even know what Windows was. Like, before I saw this whole IT journey like 3 years ago, I hadn't seen Windows since Windows XP back in 2002. And that wasn't even in my house or nothing. That was just like on the computer at the college. Anybody making six figures wasn't given six figures because of a certification. They're given six figures because they're qualified for a job that has skills to back it up, not because of the cert itself. I had gone years without making any money whatsoever. And up until that point, the most money I had ever made in a year was like $24,000. I was like, so how much would it be? I was like, yo, you know, it doesn't really matter. I guess like 35 or so. And I know that's the wrong thing to do now, but still. It hit me back, it was 65 grand. And to be perfectly honest, because I am going to talk about it on my YouTube, and so is my wife, during that time, we were planning on separating. So I'm looking at that time, and I was supposed to be going through a divorce. I had to have an income in over 4 years. The most money I had ever made, and that was only for 1 year in our whole marriage, was the $20,000-something. And so it was a real tough time.
Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and it's episode 168, How to Get into Tech with No Experience. We got another banger for you today, guys, and we have none other than Mr. Dame Hall. He has a YouTube channel, and 2 years ago, he broke into IT with no experience. He got the CompTIA Trifecta A+, Network Plus, and Security Plus in 30 days, and he was able to land an IT job. In this episode, we'll talk about his background from being from Jamaica to what he tried to do in his earlier careers. And we'll also talk about some of his family dynamics and how he's been building out his professional network since he's gotten to tech. But right now, if you're on the video and you like what you've seen so far, hit the like button and on to the show.
This video will be sponsored by SNHU. So it's 2025 and cybersecurity is still all the rage. Breaches are at an all-time high and so are cyber salaries. But there's a problem you keep running into. Cyber jobs you want to land are requiring a degree and you don't have one. Let me introduce you to today's sponsor, Southern New Hampshire University, SNHU. SNHU has a flexible online program that also touts one of the lowest tuitions in the country. SNHU is an affordable, accredited, nonprofit university that has dedicated career advisors, webinars, internships, and more to prepare you to enter or advance in the workforce. There's a 32% projected growth of information security analyst roles through 2032, and according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the median security analyst salary in 2023 was $120,000. In SNHU's program, you can learn about these critical subjects: cybersecurity foundations, networking, incident response, risk management, enterprise security, and more. As a cybersecurity professional, these are all important courses. If you would like to know more about SNHU's program, then please visit snhu.edu/textual or click the link below in the description.
First of all, this has been a long time coming. I think I went back and looked at your first video I ever reacted to.
Yeah.
I was like, man, that's 2 years ago. Almost been 3 years. For the people who don't know who you are and haven't seen you probably on YouTube in a while, could you just, you know, introduce yourself?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, my name is Damian Miraj or Damian Hall, whichever one that goes just fine. And you know, I'm not new to IT anymore, but I was a couple of years ago with a video that I had originally posted, and it's been the best ride of my life, to be honest. Been enjoying myself, been able to make waves with it, been able to build a solid and decent life, and I wanted to share that joy with everybody else too.
For sure, man. For sure. So even before we get into like your second career, we'll kind of talk about, you know, beginnings of kind of who you are and your background. I think it really helps the guests kind of identify with the person when they kind of find out a little bit about you before we get straight into the technical stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. So just getting to know a little bit more about me, I'm going to try to keep it like real short. But the real quick version of it is, I guess my life started out in Jamaica, West Indies. So I am an immigrant. I moved here when I was really young, so most of my memories are from New York when I moved there at a real young age. I did have to go through the naturalization process all by myself, and that was quite the experience. And growing up, I thought it was kind of fun, you know, like, you can't really complain about my upbringing. I think I had a loving mom, and, you know, I'd love her to death. I did grow up with like 17 other people in my house, so that was kind of fun all the time. And with my life, it's been a lot of firsts in my family. For example, like afterwards, and I went to college, I came up to Boston for college, and I was the first person in my family ever to go to college. So, you know, out here living that whole American dream. And I've been telling my kids sometimes right now, like, you know, I'm a real rags to riches story. You know, I ain't at riches yet, but I'm not at rags like I was before. So, You know, that's a real good thing. And I started out with college, and my major was completely different than what it is now. I had studied theology at first, and that finished in 2010. And from 2010 until I joined the whole tech world in 2012, I feel like it was a real struggle. And I was just trying to find my footing in this world, find what I can do. And finally, when I got into IT, you know, it was like lights out, game over. This is what I'm doing. And it was wonderful ever since then. So that's everything in a nutshell. We could go into a little more detail as we go forward, but you know, I ain't trying to avoid people with the rest of the stuff right now.
That's all good, man. Let me give you a round of applause for that real quick, man. So, because I'm trying to see, like, before I found that video, and I'll talk about the infamous video real quick. Right before that video, were you bodybuilding at the time, or what were you doing?
Yeah, that's part of what I was doing around the time, is that I had ambitions of being a bodybuilder. So that started around 2019 when I really got serious about it, because during that time I was in the midst of another trial of a career type of transition. And I thought like fitness was going to be something, because, you know, that's something that I could do. That's something that I was good at. It's a little bit of a story that I was able to build. So I thought like I'll go into bodybuilding, but for real, bro, there ain't no money in bodybuilding. Like there's a little bit of money in, like, fitness coaching and, you know, being an influencer with it, if you can get to that point. But, you know, I never won a pro show, so yeah, there wasn't going to be any money in that for me, bro. That's what you heard too?
I heard like you got to like hopefully win the show and then start getting your sponsorships and stuff to like probably see some money from it. Cause if not, it's like, it's not. Cause not really quick background, but like a friend of mine, his father-in-law trains people back home. And as he recently trained in his first pro debut, or whatever, won a show. I think he needed a couple. He had to eat like
nice,
crazy. Like, I mean, no, when I eat like crazy, eat like very strictly to maintain that physique that he was working on. And when he cut and got down and got so small, I was like, y'all got it.
Yeah, it was definitely a different level of discipline, I'll tell you that much. And it was crazy, but I mean, I had fun doing it. Just as I said, didn't really make no money. So
yeah, I think you should have been on YouTube doing your own CT Fletcher impersonation. That probably would have done it.
Y'all probably should have done that. Come and think about it. I should still do it.
That's how I low-key used to make myself go to the gym sometimes, put on some CT Fletcher.
I know, right? Yeah, that guy will get you going for real.
Yeah, him. And then way back in the day before they like switched up, like when I was in college, I used to like the Hodge twins. I don't really watch them anymore. But back then, you know, they was in shape and making, you know, jokes about the gym and stuff like that. So you want
to
work out.
Yeah. Yeah. Back then, I used to like them too.
Yeah. Not no more. I'm like.
Not no more. But, you know, like back then it was, you know. Yeah. That's what it was. So.
Exactly. They switched up, I guess, when the analytics changed. It's all good. Now, we moved past that, and you are. Like, are you just on YouTube at the time? Because I know around the time you got those certifications. And for everybody who don't know, Damien made a video where he got, I want to say, three CompTIA certifications, like 30 days, right?
Yeah, 3 in 30 days.
30 days. And I actually reacted to it. Before I even released it, I reached out to him like, yo, hey, I reacted to this, and it's going to be dropping such and such time, whatever. Because I knew you were new, so I didn't want you to feel like I was ragging on you or whatever, right? So no, I know some of your family popped up on there, so they probably didn't even know that I had actually spoke to you and was actually talking to you behind the scenes or whatever. For me, it was just a different way to just react to different content, because at that time, you had so many people making tech content or trying to get in, and so everybody's sharing their differences. So I was just giving my opinion based on, I think at that time, I had already been in 8 or 9 years, so I was telling people based on what I know now is why I probably wouldn't advise it, just because of not even on the fact of like how hard it is retain that information, but how sometimes what it could do to you as well with, and I'll let you give your opinion on it, but what I feel like happens a lot of times is a lot of the new people have watched a lot of these content creators tell them, go get your Security Plus, go get your Network Plus, go get this. And it builds up this level of expectation for them. And then they get everything so fast, but the job doesn't come as fast as they thought it would happen, as fast as they passed that test. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I tell people, like, well, I'll be like, does it matter? It can, but the way that people can either proctor these tests or go take them for you or how fast you can pass it has kind of let down like the level of relevance that a lot of hiring managers used to have for the search just because of how people are able to memorize information and then take it. And they've had plenty of people who've got certifications, but gone on the job and then pan out. And so that's why I always tell people, like, they're good, but you have to do your own thing to kind of make sure you can understand it if you're not at a lenient company. So I always tell people, maybe one or two, but if you get started getting too many, you might oversell yourself. And they, if you do get hired, they may have false expectations on you.
So what I really want to say about that too, and I think I said in the comments, is like everything you said was right. And I actually agree with everything, every part of it, the entire evaluation. So the thing about certifications is that they were sold in a way that this is all that you're going to need. The reality is that it's not. And my position was a little bit unique at the time where I was a complete true beginner. I didn't have a network. I didn't know anybody in this field. So this is my way of getting an overview or orientation of what was going on at the time. But what I can say is, like, did it lead to a job? Not directly. And I think that we're going to talk about that. Like, I put it in some of the slides that we're going to talk about, because it's not certifications that get jobs. It's really skills that get the job. And what the certifications did for me, it told me what skills I need to go get. It gave me the vocab that I needed around the area. But directly, no, it doesn't lead to a job the way that people made it seem. So when people watch your reaction, I know that you're kind of treading carefully on it, but the reality is that you were right. Like, no, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And also the expectation that people can have, like, I do believe in doing certs fast just because I want to get them out of the way so you can move on to better things. Like, for example, we're going to talk about that too. Like, networking, I think, is probably one of the bigger things that you're going to want to do. And if I can get the certs out of the way, then I can start networking faster. That's all it was. So that's what was going on in my mind for it. But my position at the time was unique. And the reality is, yo, you know what you was talking about. That's it. That's all it is.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Ben. Because like I said, a lot of times, a lot of people, sometimes they when they come to my content, they've always came on some content where I'm like ripping into something, but they've never watched the full video. Like, I have, like, my biggest short to date is telling people, hey, certification is not going to get you six figures. And I still get people to come.
It's not.
And, you know, they'll say, they'll, you know, people will talk about the minority instead of the majority. And I'm like, so a lot of times I mess with them, like, well, do you want a cookie? Because, like, I know this can happen for some people, but it didn't happen for everybody. So that's what I'm preaching to. Or if I'm
you want me to take it a step further, bro?
Go ahead.
Because I don't think it's ever happened for anybody. Anybody making six figures wasn't given six figures because of a certification. They're given six figures because they're qualified for a job that has skills to back it up, not because of the cert itself. They definitely did. They went above and beyond what was necessary in the cert. But ain't nobody out here, even in today's world, just writing a six-figure check to somebody just because they got certed.
Yeah. I would say there's some caveats from that just based on what I know from coaching over the last 5 years. Like, certain people have certain relationships and all they've had to get is a certain cert to meet certain requirements and they're getting the job. Or there are people who have some high-level skills in another type of job role and they have some transferable skills that lead to that.
Yeah.
So I always put those caveats out there because there are people that's like that, because there'll be people right now that are watching. They say, well, hey, you just did a video of a person who didn't have no experience and they making six figures doing this and that. So I was like, I know those, but I was like, for most people with no high level income skills already starting from zero, most likely you're not going to get six figures. You hopefully you will get 45 to 55, maybe at a help desk or something.
Possibly. Because what you just said is the real truth is that they already had some high level skills that were in demand, whether it's like organization or some type of project management. And they're brought into the tech world to be able to put together projects because some of us as engineers, we're not that organized. And we need someone that's on the outside that can, you know, keep us accountable and organized. And that's a six-figure skill that they had. And they said, okay, if you go get your Sec Plus, we'll bring you in to be able to help us get organized. But really the six figures is for that skill of project management. Or like what the other thing that he said is that they already knew somebody. So it was now their network and who was vouching for them. And it was that person saying, I'll hold this person's hand. I'll make sure they get the job done. I'll make sure they become competent in this. And that's what did it more than the cert itself.
Yeah. No, for sure. And we could talk about that later on.
Yeah.
Just watching, know how many times I've said, hey, I've advocated for some people I've coached or known, and they've been able to get certain roles because, of course, they still have to come through in the interview.
Mm-hmm.
If you get out, very good referral from somebody that's respected, with another person that's respected at the company, you got a good shot at least of interviewing. And if you're better than everybody else, you got a good shot at landing the job. So after those three, the trifecta. After the trifecta, how long did it take you to land? Well, actually, that's let me not even get ahead of myself. How long was it before you got your first interview?
My first interview was like 3 weeks. It would have been even faster too. But remember, I was still in the whole bodybuilding mindset. I had done a bunch of other fitness certs too. Now, the fitness certs are really easy. I've been training since I was 16 years old. So I did a whole master trainer certification, and I got that done in 1 week. After that, I started applying for jobs. And within 2 weeks, I started landing a couple of interviews. Now, with some of them, the interview was ready to move forward with me, but I knew for a fact that I wasn't ready for the role. Like, one of them was this whole cybersecurity role where they wanted to have me put together, like, training programs for other people. I'm like, yo, 5 weeks ago, I didn't even know what Windows was. Like, before I started this whole IT journey, like, 3 years ago, I hadn't seen Windows since Windows XP back in 2002. And that wasn't even in my house or nothing. That was just, like, on the computer at the college. So it's like, what do I know? This is not the role for me. I'll be setting myself up for failure, for example. So even though that was my first interview, I had to take a step back from that and realize if I'm going to be in this for the long run, I'm going to need to make sure that I select the right position for me that's going to fit where I'm at right now and give me the chance to be able to move on. So it took about 2 weeks for me to get my first interview. And even that was surprising.
Okay, that's cool. I think, too, you also just have the imposter syndrome, because what you described is a role that I see a lot of people can do, like pretty much security and awareness training, where they got these programs they're putting together for people. And like prime example, I did some training last week at work, and the guy was just a technical trainer. And all he did was walk us through the training and show us different things and answer questions we had about different things in AWS. I was like, those are things I can see teachers actually doing, because they are good at that, mm-hmm. good at probably putting the curriculum together and all that different things. So, like, a lot of times I have to tell people sometimes to get out their own head too sometimes, because you just never know. Like, and I'm pretty sure you experienced this too. You probably thought you was like on some baby level, which in so many ways you were.
Yeah.
But then you got to work with some people who were so-called experienced, and you was like.
Yeah, that did happen a lot.
Yeah, so. So give me a rundown of that interview process. Like, I guess, how many do you think you did before you finally found the role that you settled on?
I only did like 4 interviews before that, because as I said, I was looking for the right company, not necessarily the first one that was going to jump out at me. Some of them, they seemed like they were okay, but I just didn't feel like I would be able to invest myself fully in it. Like, as far as time-wise or the shift that they desired for it or the distance that they wanted to go at the time. So that's why I had to kind of take a step back from that. And at that time, it was really hard because I had just logged 3 whole years of making $0. So it was really hard to have to step back from that and realize, like, even though I really need money right now, I really also need to be there for my family the way that I truly want to be. So then after that, one company hit me up, and it was on Hanscom Air Force Base, which I'm very familiar with. So that's one thing that kind of perked me up. I was like, oh, wow, look at this. It's right outside where my unit was when I was in the Army. So that's why I actually gave them a call back. And as I started talking to them, it felt like it was kind of, it was chill. Like, I understood the environment. They asked me about the whole secret clearance thing, and I was just like, oh, snap, y'all forgot that I even had one of those things. So then, and then they hit me up. It was like, oh, good, you have a clearance. So, you know, this is something that's going to put you ahead of other people for this. I was like, for real? And I was like, all right, cool. He's like, you know, and then they want to schedule an interview with me. I took the interview, and the guy seemed pretty cool. I mean, the interview was hard as hell, to be honest. It was all right. You know, we vibed a little bit with certain places. You know, I try to be real with it. He asked me certain questions. I said, hey, I have no idea about that. He was like, oh, that's all right. Then he like would tell me exactly about it. We move on to something else. And then he would ask me what he asked before to make sure I was actually tracking it or like taking it in. And then I repeated it back to him. Like, oh, that's good. And after that, they sent me a job offer. And I was just like, yo, I got to take this one. Unfortunately, like I did procrastinate on it, where they wanted me to start like within the next week. But for me, I was like, well, I got to get my life together. I got to make sure I hit the ground running there. I got to do a couple other things. So I put it off 3 more weeks for my start date. And they're like, fine, whatever, we got you. And then also timed it a little bit. Like, it was my start date, by the way, was my mom's birthday. So I was happy about that.
Man, that's interesting though, because I know, like, that's the thing where people talk about the clearance, and that's why I see when the clearances matter, when it is a role, yes, you need a clearance for the other people have, because it just sucks. Like, I know mine is expired. I hadn't used my clearance in almost 10 years, so I do tell you, if you can if you can hold on to it, hold on to it. But I was like, if you don't plan to, you want to go to, you know, the dark side of the private sector, by all means, do what you have to do. Now, since we were talking about earlier when I was saying, like, what a potential salary that you could possibly get, like, do you mind sharing, like, what that first role was paying with the clearance? Yeah,
I'll be happy to share all the salary type of stuff. Like I said, for me, I had gone years without making any money whatsoever. And up until that point, the most money I had ever made in a year was like $24,000. And that was way back in like 2016. And that included the job that I had that wasn't paying that much, included my military pay because I was a weekend warrior, National Guard at the time. And that was the most I'd ever made until then. So honestly, I'm coming into this world. I'm in this for the long haul. I'm in this to be able to like really grow with this. So I'm okay with starting at not too much. I'm expecting it to be like, you know, 30, 35 grand. It just had to be better than I had been doing before. That's all I cared about. Yo, these guys, I even told them that in an interview too. I was like, so how much would it be? I was like, you know, doesn't really matter. I guess like 35 or so. And I know that's the wrong thing to do now, but still, you know, that's what I said. They hit me back with it and they said, hey, we want to send you an offer letter. Can you just send us one thing left? I was like, sure, no doubt. They hit me back. It was 65 grand. I hit my mom up. I was like, yo, mom, can you believe this? She's like, nope, it's probably a scam. Look into that. So, because like I didn't have a real work experience like that. Like I hadn't really been through that much. So for this to be right off the bat, it kind of took me by surprise. Looked into them. They were legit. I got in touch with some of their employees. Before that, even like when the job itself wasn't on the base. That's the thing. It was right off the base. So I went there one day, like checked out some of the people. I was like, oh, this is for real. I could do this. Yeah. I accepted that. So my first role, it was 65K.
Yeah, man. No, I mean, I asked that to him. I'm glad you're being transparent here because, like, you know, some people that they live on social media. Everybody's making a lot of money. And I'm like, the Bureau of Labor Statistics will tell you like what the average, you know, person makes, average family brings in. I was like, the average like couple is not even making six figures together. So I was like, that's a come up. And I would say like, because I believe you may be like a little bit older than me. I'll be 33 Sunday. So I think you were like 34 2 years ago. So you might be turning 35, 36 this year.
I'm 37.
Okay, 37. So dang, it was 3 years ago.
it was 3 years almost to the day.
Wow, that's crazy. But no, like everybody, this also goes back into one of the other things, like where it comes in like your Black communities or, you know, like you say, Jamaican or whatever. A lot of people don't have a lot of people that's worked in corporate America they can even go talk to or collar stuff. So like, for example, you're saying like your mom said, check this out, a scam. Like, I don't think I told my mom like my first security salary. She just knew it was more than whatever I was making previously when I was working at the NOC. But like, even when I used to talk to her about, you know, this company is hitting me up about possibly interviewing this and that, she was like, well, then you've been at this company X amount, like companies like loyalty. And my mom was like, I'm not leaving money on the table. Cause at that time I'd already been laid off before. So I was like, once you get laid off, you don't really care anymore about that loyalty stuff. And that was stuff that companies displayed when they were paying people pensions and everything else, reasons to stay at companies for, you know, 15, 20, 30 years. That's not happening anymore. It's like most of the time it's like a union type of job. So I said like that's, you're pretty much going through what a lot of people go through. Like that's why they'll reach out to like me or some others that like make themselves accessible to like say, yeah, you know, that's a good offer. Well, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, have like no experience. There will be people watching this with no experience and will be thinking from that trifecta that they should get more than 65. And I was like, granted, if a company want to pay you that, cool. But if not, I don't see how you taking the L unless like you were probably making more doing another job. And in times like that, I tell people like, well, if you make an X amount, you could probably go laterally, like make a lateral move. But I was like, if not, just save in case you got to take a little step back. And then by a year or two, you should be back at the same salary.
Now, that's some good advice. Like, I'm going to have to write that down for myself, even like thinking about where I'm going next. So,
yeah. There's other things people as well. It's like the fact that you made 65 early on, now you start seeing, okay, now I got 2-3 years experience. I can make 85, 95, you know, 105, 150. Yeah. Like, it really don't matter. You see all different type of ranges now. But it's harder for you to ask for X amount of money if you've never made past a certain amount. And I tell everybody that, because once you start seeing the numbers, like after I started hitting a certain threshold, sometimes I used to get scared. It's like, well, hey, I only, like my minimum is like, you know, 150, whatever, something. And at first, I used to be scared of that. But as time went on, I was like, it's either that or nothing. Like, it's just, yeah. And you kind of get accustomed to it. And there are some companies that pay like much more. Like when you start, like even if they just hit you back for an interview, like, dang, they paying that much. So,
but. Yeah, well, my price has gone way up since then. So,
yeah, that's the thing. And that's the good thing about it too, is like the only place you can go is up from the bottom. There's a lot of people talking about the process. Everything you're doing now is preparing you for the next role after that. You might have to dig back down from something you learned 4 or 5 years ago and use it at a new role. Like, it's all relative when you look at it at the end of the day.
Exactly. But it's been a good trip upwards, to be honest. Like, trust me, my mom's happy, my wife's happy. It's been a dope trip upwards. We'll talk more about that as we go forward.
Yeah, so that first role, was it like system admin, help desk, technical support? Like, what was like the title of that role?
The title was a sysadmin. But I ended up doing what I think is help desk. Like, I've never done pure help desk. I've never dealt with end users, but it was almost like help desk for other sysadmins in a way. When they got to a point where it was like, well, we don't know exactly what to do, I would do the RMA stuff, or I would do a final assessment on it, or things like certificates of destruction. It was like that type of role. And It was cool, like, you know, for the pay was great for the work that we did. But at the same time, you know, by talking to all the people that were more hands-on, it made me itch to want to be more hands-on myself. So that's all it was. But it felt like being the help desk of tech guys. Like, what do tech guys go for the help desk? That was what it was.
Yeah. So pretty much kind of like what support engineers do for certain different things.
Yeah.
Reach out to a cloud support engineer or like an engineer of whatever tool. It's kind of like that.
That's what it felt like. And it was good because like I got to see how things worked. It just wasn't that great because it wasn't me directly being on those things.
Yeah. So how long did you stay there? About a year?
A little less than a year, because my boss at the time, and that's another good thing about this world. Like, I started out with no network, that changed real quick. So, you know, I got into this job, and my boss at the time took a real liking to this type of stuff. He realized like I was itching. He wanted to get me some like real hands-on experience. Like, I had done some more certs, and he knew like this is really what I wanted. I remember at one point, like, I had done the PCNSA, that the Palo Alto certification, and like he knew that I wanted. So he grabbed a firewall and said, here, take this, do whatever you want to it. So he was really itching to get me to be more hands-on. So that role, so first of all, let me back up a little bit. That role transformed really quickly. So I started out like that. And then within 2 months, I got my first raise and also got a mild promotion. 4 months later, I got another promotion where I was the one kind of like the lead for that team, the lead sysadmin there. After that, my boss at the time was like, I know you want a little bit more hands-on skill. So he's like, I'm going to make a network admin role for you. So he put some things together and he carved out a role for a network admin. He slid me right into that. And he was like, all right, so what I want you to do now is just to go for it. Just go ahead and do it. And that happened about 9 months after I had started at the other role. So
that's cool, man. But the thing, and see, I'm talking to the audience now. If you're listening, you're finding out what a lot of us already know. Most of the people that you work with are not high performers. They're just there. So if you can get in an environment where they curate the opportunity for you to promote and get raises and you actually see success from the hard work you do, mm-hmm. you'll be fine. Now, the hard part is just finding places like that, because a lot of times, no matter what you do, you won't get promoted. And that's when you realize, all right, I'm finna just do the bare minimum. So the fact that you ever see that early on actually does a lot to morale and confidence, because you go in and it's like, I don't know, experience, man, do I really know what I'm doing? Then you, that's why I said earlier, I said, I bet you ran into other people that's been there longer than you, but it's like, you doing better than them.
Yeah, well now I have. To be fair, at that job, though, the people were pretty good. And I guess it was that role at the time was made to be a transitional role. So what they would do is that they'd take people that were promotable in other places and they'd keep us there until another position opened up. So most people that came into where I was at, they had come from other places and they were just kind of waiting until a better role opened up later on. The turnover was like every 4 months, to be honest. So
makes sense. A little limbo role.
Yeah, it was a limbo role, without a doubt. And cool.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and everyone, like, they definitely moved on. Like, some people moved on to like BAE Systems, other people moved on to Raytheon. So it was definitely like that position where you get to see everything about what's going on, and you get to kind of peek in, and then after that, someone's gonna pick you up and you move on.
Okay. That's nice. At least you gotta move on. Like I said, my first step is wrong. I was trying to go. I got asked to go from the messaging team. I got asked to not go to the internal SOC for the companies. So I said, I had to leave because I ain't doing another year of this. 2.5 years was long enough for me. And I did what I could, and I was out. I was almost going a year prior, but it wasn't time for me to move just yet. So, but that's cool. And so after the network admin role, did you continue to stay at the same company, or did you realize, hey, I want to go see different environments? Like, what did you do?
It was the same company, and it was a little bit hard for me to be able to move on from there because of the lack of experience, the lack of time, and the way that people measure experience. So it's not like the jobs weren't coming in. It's just like at that time. So at first, I was 65. It moved to 72 real quick within a couple of weeks. And then I was up to 77 as a net admin. And by that time, there were other people that were offering me like help desk roles, but they were paying like 45,000. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if I'm already at 77, I'm not going to go back to 45,000. Not to mention that my boss at the time was willing to give me some real good experience. Can I give you the first experience I had with him?
Go ahead.
He asked me like, yo, are you nervous about anything? And I was like, yo, I'm nervous about messing up. I don't want to break anything. I don't want to mess anything up, you know, so I'm going to try to be real careful. I don't want to like get in the way of anything. He's like, so that's what you're scared of. And this guy's a Marine, by the way. So it's like, you know, this whole tough guy persona going on. You're scared of messing things up, right? I was like, yeah, I'm mad scared of messing things up. This guy went there, started yanking wires, got on the computer. He's like, boom, everything's messed up first day. Your fears are realized. What you going to do now? And he was just doing that to say, messing up is not the worst thing that we can go through, especially since, like, at the time I was working in like a lab environment where they were doing a lot of testing. So he's like, if you're going to mess up, this is the place for you to do that. And you know, that was good for me, to be honest, because then I had to spend the rest of the day fixing everything that he just messed up and learned a ton, to be honest.
Yeah, man, that's dope, man. So glad you got the experience of that. So how did you start getting past the gatekeeping of you don't have enough experience?
A lot of it, like, I keep talking about my boss, because 90% of the getting past the gatekeeping was through networking, which I think is probably the most underrated thing that we're seeing right now. Like, a lot of people, they go directly and don't realize that your network is probably going to give you a little bit more leverage than you really think it is. You know, like on LinkedIn, how people talk about the whole issue with the green banner and what recruiters think about it. In my mind, I'm like, okay, it could be right, to be honest. Like, it could make you look desperate. But the reality is that recruiters ain't the only ones on your LinkedIn. You got friends, you got your network, you got other people, you got me there. And I'm not a recruiter. But if I see a person that I know and they might be in need, guess what? You might not be in job offers, but I am. I know you are. A lot of people with more experience, they get job offers. And a lot of times those job offers are so far beneath where you are today, but you know a person that could fit that role real good. So what really made me get through the gatekeepers was making sure that my network was pretty solid. And the people that were, like, for example, my boss, he would get job offers. And then he'd be like, you know what? I can't take a job like this, but I know exactly who can. And that's really how a lot of getting through the gatekeepers worked. It was not, I haven't really made much headway directly like through recruiters, but through my network, absolutely.
See, he's already making all my points. But we actually talked about this last Friday on the live show. I was saying how people with no experience or trying to get jobs and referrals and everything, but they don't post on LinkedIn. Nobody knows who they are. So yeah. It's easy to refer somebody. Yeah, you may not have talked to them a minute, but you go peruse their profile and say, oh, they did this blog. Let me see how they write about. Oh, they know a lot. They probably would be good for the team. Hey, yeah, man, send your resume over. I'll refer you.
Exactly.
And that's typically how it happens sometimes. Now, you can't just, I don't know if I should just go in and say, hey, I see you work so-and-so. Can you give me a referral? I got to be some type of finesse, at least talk to them a little while, and then kind of say, well, you know, I'm kind of need a referral, whatever. I saw you work for the team, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of what you do. Either that, or I used to go to people that worked on the teams and figure out who the hiring manager or manager is or the recruiter. I mean, it's a whole bunch of ways to leverage LinkedIn. A lot of people are just on there whining versus actually just doing the work. That's what I see a lot of times when I start looking at people. It's like, see how simple this was? And you on there listening to people that are just crying. They just don't have a good strategy.
Yeah, it's really a lot more of the strategy and stuff. And unfortunately, on the most part, depending on who you connect with, LinkedIn's kind of not the place to be, because when you're in a place of despondency, it validates your despondency to the point that you feel like, oh, wow, look at this. I found this haven, this community, this congregation that feels just like me. And it kind of could hold you down. You probably notice that on LinkedIn too. Like, you post on LinkedIn, it doesn't get as much engagement as the people that's on YouTube. And people out here actually getting hired off of your YouTube stuff. Like, people that comment under your YouTube.
Yeah.
Or for example, I'm pretty sure, I'm not on Twitter, but I know for a fact that the people that are more go hard will be on Twitter and someone else will pick that up.
Yeah. So, well, it depends. I found out like a lot of my target audiences, a lot of them are on LinkedIn now. They probably reach out through like LinkedIn, YouTube. And occasionally some of the other social sites. Like, I have a decent size following on X, but I used to get like more leads from X like back in 2022. Not as many now, because that's kind of like died down. People ran kind of like the black tech Twitter thing into the ground. Yeah. People had a bad taste in their mouth from it, but the veterans that were there, like me and others, we still continue to thrive there and be able to provide some value. But no, you're absolutely right, man. I mean, the funny thing is, too, guys, like, I don't have anything written down, so I'm actually just going off of hearing what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's great that you actually have a manager that's advocating for you, too. That's one of the big things I always tell people. Like, honestly, it took me 4 companies, so I finally got a manager that advocated for me and got me raises and got me different positions internally with HR and everything. And like I said, those jobs like that just do a lot to your confidence, because a lot of times you're wondering, like, am I really doing good? Like, how do I measure if I'm actually doing good? And I start feedback from the client, from, you know, other upper management. I was like, okay, I think I'm here. Because I previously came off a layoff, so not even just knowing, like, hey, I was at a company that I didn't even learn a lot at, so I'm kind of worried about messing up here. Like you said, I'm worried about, like, you know, you get that fear of, like any. I remember, like, I was on paternity leave, and I couldn't log into my account, so I was like, dang, they asked me, working. But it's just the policy of, like, hey, if you hadn't logged in over a couple of months, then they just, you know, disable your account until you get the okay from your manager to get your account reenacted. But like, just those different thoughts to go through your head, like when you go into a layoff, just the fact you got to go through is okay, cool. I'm good. I'm all right. I'm not messing nothing up like I thought I was.
Yeah. And to be honest though, like for me, I feel like I've just been fortunate because I've only worked with great teams and with mostly good managers. There's only one that I had an issue with. Crazy thing is, like, it wasn't even that he had an issue. We had an issue with me or anything like that. What happened was that there's another guy on the team that was older, more seasoned, very experienced, really gentle. And he started treating him like a child. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like that. So, like, I was, like, trying to defend my coworkers. Like, yo, I understand if you come down on me like that because, you know, I'm new, I'm learning, I could take the feedback. This guy, he been around a little. You better show him a little bit of respect. And that's where, like, the contention started with him. So with that one, I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to step aside a little bit and then, you know, find another role for a little bit of time, because I could see that this can turn bad. It didn't turn bad. But I can see, like, down the road, it could turn bad, and I just don't want to have an early bad tech story. So that's why I stepped aside from that one.
Yeah, and I think you learn some too. Sometimes you just gotta let adults take up for themselves, because it's like, it's not really your problem as much as it would. Like, it's different if somebody like picked on somebody at school or something, and you was able to write, do it, everybody's the same level. But at work, it's kind of like, okay, if he's cool with it, I'm cool with it. I would probably tell him, probably, hey, don't let him talk to you like that. But he'd be like, man, I'm just doing my job. So,
yeah. Well, and that's the thing. He was a chill guy. So, he, for his mind, he's like, I don't care. Get yelled at. I get the same paycheck anyway. Whatever. So, he was okay. So,
yeah. So, how were you able to get like all these freaking, like, I remember, like, at one point in time, every time you come across my YouTube feed, you was getting a new certification. Like, how many? Now, I'm not going to ask how many of your certs are current now, but how many certifications do you have?
43.
For real?
Yeah.
Is this including, is this just tech alone or not including
tech? Yeah, just tech alone for now.
Dang, how did you?
So, as again, like, you have to take everyone in stride. I don't want anyone looking at this as thinking like this is what they have to do. The reason why I can do it is because for me, this has been my life for a very long time, like being able to read a lot, being able to consume a lot of information. There's one point in my life where I was reading 2 books a day. So this is just part of who I am as a person. And for me, the reason why I do it is because if I get interested in something, I'll be able to start the certification study period on Friday night and go to work on Monday morning, take the test and drive to work, and I would have been able to achieve it. Just because I'm interested in the technology. So like the Microsoft stuff, that's what I did with it. The Palo Alto, the VCP, like the VMware stuff that I've done. That's really what it was. But I don't want to set myself up as a rule of, or anything. This is just a little bit of who I am and how I function with life. And that's really why I did it. I just want to know more about it from the vendor's perspective.
Okay. So got it. As you're talking, all I'm thinking about is wrestling, because I'm going to tell you why. You probably like, why are you thinking about wrestling? Well, Dean Malenko was supposed to be the wrestler that knew like 1,000 moves. So yeah. I'm, you know, like the man with 40 certs. So, about Dean Malenko, I was like, this is crazy, man.
I couldn't be Kakashi, man. Like, guy with 1,000 jutsus.
Kakashi copied 1,000. He don't know 1,000. They said on TV, Dean Malenko knew like 1,000 moves.
Oh, okay, I get it.
This video is being sponsored by Textual Consulting. Are you still struggling to get into cybersecurity? Are you not getting interviews? Do you have a bad resume? Or is it all of the above? Well, if that's you, then we got you covered at Textual Consulting. My name is Henry Davis. I'm a career coach and a cybersecurity professional, and I've helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people get into cybersecurity with my coaching and my content that you've seen in various places. Now, I specialize in specifically getting people in the blue team, that would be incident response or SOC analysts. I can cover everything from your entry level to your medium to your advanced skills and really help you outperform your resume. You don't believe me? Check out some of these testimonials that I've had from recent clients. So if you're interested, click the link in my bio, textualconsulting.com/offerings, to see what offerings that we have available for you. Now, back to the show.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, one of the graphics that I have with how people learn at different rates, and that's what they need to understand. So in a top left corner there, you'd see that there's what's called the positive logarithmic curve, where things kind of go slow at the beginning and then they skyrocket. The one at the upper right, that's where I put myself. Like, I can learn things very quickly and then they level off. If you look at where they peak at the top, they end up at the same point. That's really important. Other people are like the bottom left, where that's what I call the step and grow one. And then there's people at the bottom right with the linear one. Now, from what I know about you, you're like the bottom right one. Those are people that you put them in, they get experience, they learn and grow as they go, the bottom right. And like, that's where they have the linear growth up. They're just always learning. Something new is a new challenge. There's a new day. They keep going up. For me, I'm the top right, where I can learn things really quickly. So I get to the point of like understanding quickly, and then it kind of levels off because you only go so far. Lots of people are at the top left, where things don't really make sense for a very long time, and then they click. Those people, which is the vast majority, are the people that are going to need mentorship. The reason why is because a mentor knows if you just stick with it long enough, is going to click soon. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people give up way too early, where they feel like, oh, I give up, I can't get this. Those people need people around them to say, nope, push a little bit further, a little bit harder, one more time. And all of a sudden it clicks. And when it clicks, you see them skyrocket. All of a sudden it's like they're a whole different person within a short period of time. And then at the bottom left one, there's someone on LinkedIn that I follow. I love that guy too. He's always labbing. That's what I call like the step and grow one. It's like a person that they will sit down and lab. They'll hustle really hard. They at one point they're stuck, and then all of a sudden, boom, they get it, they solve it, they grow, they jump another level. And what you have to do is you have to realize exactly who you are as a person. Because like for me, doing the search is such an easy thing, and because I kind of learn quick, I kind of pick them up quickly. That's just what I do. And it doesn't take away from other things I'm doing. For other people, I wouldn't recommend it, because for them to do the Security Plus, and there's nothing wrong with this, it will take them 6 months. And for them, that's 6 months of delay. And I don't want people wasting time in order to get to something, especially when they were fully qualified months before. It's just that they are a little bit different. There's also a lot of other people that have something that I don't have, which is I'm not really that great at networking, to be honest. And that takes me a while. It takes me like months and months to make a solid connection. So because of that, I have to kind of do it a little bit in reverse, where I front load it all and got it out of the way. That's why I did them all in 30 days. And I hustled really hard the next couple of months. So yeah. I hope that kind of makes sense on what I was doing.
But no, you know, it's funny. That's another reason why I was always on, not against Security Plus, but I was like, I always use my own examples. Like, hey, I got the book back in there from Barnes & Noble, big Security Plus book, finished it in about 2 weeks. And I was taking my test, and I was doing decent on my test. But all in all, it probably took me about 4, 5, 6 weeks maybe. But I finished it in the summer. I was out for summer for school. But that's why I told people, I was like, honestly, at that time, I wasn't ready to work like security for anybody. But I was like, I was able to pass it easily. So that's why I would tell people like why I don't really gouge it that high at actually saying you got skills to do the job, and why I'm much more advocate for more practical tests now. Because though they may take you longer to finish, I think it's a better way to showcase a skill set versus memorization. Because some people are just, like you said, they can read fast, they got good memorization, and they know it that way. But sometimes it don't translate over to them on the job. Now, some people are able to do all three. Now, those people.
Which is phenomenal.
Right.
So that's the thing is like, so I have a hot take on the Security Plus. So.
Now go ahead. But, my podcast is for hot takes.
All right, you sure about this one? So I truly believe that the Security Plus is not a professional cybersecurity cert. I'm a firm believer that it's an introduction to the field. Let me give an example. For me, I went to school afterwards. I did business in school, right? Mm-hmm. As part of my business degree, I had to take accounting one, accounting two, cost accounting, managerial accounting. So I took 4 accounting classes. And I would ask you, after all that, am I qualified to be an accountant? The answer is no, I'm not qualified to be an accountant. What I am qualified to do is work comfortably with accountants to not piss them off. I can do that. I can do the budget sheets. They can write reports to me, understand what's going on. But I am not an accountant. Neither am I qualified to be one. And that's how I see the Security Plus. It allows you to practice other IT fields and other things in a secure way to not piss off the security teams. But it alone is not enough to make you a security professional. It's intro to IT. It's a general cert, in my opinion.
Yeah. You just made me think about me in college. I had to take accounting one, accounting two.
You took that too?
I had to take like 3 economics classes. I took micro, macro, and I think monetary economics. Like, so I'm like, I'm not an economist and I'm not an accountant.
Exactly. So that's the thing. And I do think that there are cybersecurity professionals that have the Sec Plus, but it's all the other skills that make them the professional. It's not the cert itself. I have my Sec Plus, and I don't think I wouldn't hire me to have a cybersecurity role right now, because I haven't really prepped myself with the necessary skills. And on the most part, like, especially with how things are going in, it's like every organization is coming out with a new cert and you'll never be able to keep up, and a lot of them overlap. There's not many that I would actually give that much credence to, but I would give a lot of credence to some of the projects that people are coming out with nowadays, which are actually fun. They're real fun. So I would say that a person should focus on doing a lot of those things and give themselves some talking points with what they actually did and how much they enjoy doing those things.
I would actually say you would be qualified just based on your last 3 years of doing networking, system administration, and other stuff. Because I've worked with these sysadmins to where one of my guys just got a security engineering role. But he was, I always tell people like this, and this is free game for you. I've talked to many different people. A lot of times I get their resume and I hear what they do today to day. I was like, yeah, you doing some security engineering work, but they say sysadmin because they don't have to pay you X amount based on that title. And so a lot of times I actually change the resumes to where it says security engineering or vulnerability management, whatever you was doing the most of, and that's what it lines up with, that's what we go with. And he had stories about, hey, how he did this, how he fixed the vulnerability management plan, how he deployed Microsoft Purview and all these different tools.
That's good stuff, though.
Yeah. So I was like, you're doing security engineering work. You just want to get paid for it. And he was able to, he just started his job Monday, the new job. He actually mentioned me on Discord earlier about like, he's seeing different pain points and things he can solve. So I tell people like, you'd be surprised the skills that you gain. And that's where, when you're talking about a mentor, that's what it takes a person who's been in a little bit longer that can extrapolate everything, pull the curtains back and like, I see the skill set. I see you can do this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. Go probably study this a little bit more, but you can do exactly this, especially if you like it. Because I always ask people, okay, what you like about what you currently do? And then when they start telling me, I say, okay, you would like this role. Because that's the other thing. People are trying to apply to so many different things. They're not hitting anything. When I say we need to get specific, everything in your resume need to get more specific and specific to your role types, and we'll be successful.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about that. Yeah, exactly. So this is what it is. And you know, this is what everyone want to get to, the rewards. So I just picked five random roles like that are out there. All right, so there's just five random roles, and this is what we want to get towards. We want to get towards the point where we're like, all right, you know, I want to get this reward. I want to be able to get the job. But when we go to it, the very first thing that happens with the job is like we have to check our skills inventory. And that's what I'm going to call it, like, you know, taking from video games. You watch Solo Leveling, man?
I'm not caught up, but I've watched a little bit of it.
Yeah, everybody should watch that one. Yo, that shit is dope. But anyway, yo, check it. So this is where we want to get to. But we have to check our skills inventory. Now we get to the point where we check our skills inventory, and this was me too. And with everyone, it's just like that. We start out empty. But what else do you know is about this? Not only do we not have the skills loaded in, we don't even know what the skills that we need are. And that's what I started out too. So then the very first thing, even before we get to the point of acquiring the skills, we have to be aware of what the skills were at the time. So then we have to know what skills are actually necessary. And that's when we become skill aware. Like, what's actually aware for, what do you have to be aware of? What's out there for me to do? And there's a few different ways to do it, depending on what you have access to. The first way is with certifications. That tells you what you need to go experience. And the next slide is going to make it even more clear. The second one, which I think is probably the best way, is with mentorship. The third way is with experience, because once you have experience, you start realizing, all right, here's where the skills work. Here's what I need. Here's what's out there. But you can't always give yourself experience. The last one is to just raw dog it and be like, yo, I'm just going to go at it and kind of wherever I land is where I land. But you have to get aware of the skills that are necessary. So then what happens when we become aware? All of a sudden, we're aware of the skills, but notice we don't have any of them. The bars aren't filled in. We haven't gotten them yet. So what certifications do for us is that it gets us aware of what skills are out there to be achieved, but they are not the skill themselves. And that's what I will mean. When I first did those certifications, I was aware of all the skills that I needed, but I didn't have any of them yet. For that, I had to do a couple other things. And with that, how do you acquire these skills? Home labbing, mentorship again, like that keeps coming up because that's really a make or break most of the time. Internships, and of course, raw dogging it again. But you have to be able to acquire those skills. And then from there, after going through your experiences, that's where you are now able to fill in your skills. And now you can actually look at your skills inventory. Finally, you take the skills that you have, you go back over to the rewards that you want to get out of it. And then what happens there? One of them's unlocked. So for me, it was congratulations. You qualify as a junior sysadmin. Wonderful. And it wasn't directly that the search led to the skills. It was that the search led to awareness. The awareness made me go acquire the skills. Me acquiring the skills got me to the job itself. It wasn't the only way I could, this is not the only way to go, but it was what I had available to me at the time. And that's why I took that way. And the final slide, this is the real point that I want to make with it. A lot of times we think like the search gets us a job, but that's not how it works. It's skills awareness, at least the skill acquisition when you put in the work that leads to our skill expression. And then we're given the job because of the skills that we have.
That's nice right there, man. That's what they say. You took us to church.
Yeah, you know, the whole preacher thing is always going to be a part of me, you know?
I know, man. I might have to put in years ago in one of my videos, like 5 years ago or 4 years ago, I was talking about how many jobs told me no. And I had this part of like, so I used to be a really big fan of wrestling. I stopped watching by like middle school, but it was a part when D-Von Dudley became like a preacher and he was telling everybody, oh, my brother, testify. And that's the part. So I was like, I'm going to have to go find one of them and put him saying testify. My brother,
testify. After that. Exactly. You're right, man.
No, but you know what's funny is a lot of people are visual learners. So a lot of people literally have to see it. So like what you just demonstrated is what I do sometimes is a roadmap. Or it's, like, it's not kind of like a roadmap matrix, but I tell the people that, hey, these levels of this aren't linear. So like sometimes to start off like your research phase, your labbing phase, networking, interview, landing your job, and then you have the arrows going up and down because you're still constantly learning more and networking and interviewing and all through the whole process. But I was like, when people can see it, they can believe it, they can receive it. So that's good, man. They actually are going to be blessed by that for real. You're the first to come with their own infographics and say, hey, man, I got something to show them. So I like that. I like that.
Yeah, like for me, I am part artist. So like when I was in school, that's what I did. My minor was in visual communication, which is part of the art department. And you know, there's two different sides of art. You have the fine artists that they're just good. They know how to make things pretty for the sake of being pretty. And then you have visual communicators that we were supposed to deal with things like fonts and other things. Can I tell you about the time when I did that too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost got a job offer. It was a little bit beyond me, and like I'm still in touch with that company, so that's a cool thing. But at first, when I put my name in the hat to be a network engineer, the first feedback they gave me was that they were looking for someone that had more Fortinet experience. At the time, I had never touched anything with Fortinet, so they told me like, you know, we like you as a candidate, you're doing pretty good, but you just don't have the Fortinet experience. And this was on a Thursday, so the way that I do things. I started hitting the books on Friday, and that's why I did some of the Fortinet certifications. Not only that, but I had overnighted some of these for the whole thing. Oh, and I started working on those. And then I started researching the company. I looked through their FCC type things because anytime a company does a data center or something, they have to register the whole communication stuff with the FCC. So I started looking at that and saying, okay, where's their data center located? And I put together an entire presentation and plan about how SD-WAN network would work for them and like put the configurations all together. I hit them back up. I was like, hey, I know last time we talked, you told me that you're looking for someone with a little bit of experience. I want you to review this and tell me what you think. They said, you know what? Let's start over with the first interview again. So they said I wasn't going to progress to the second interview. They're like, with all this new stuff that you just dropped on us, the presentation, the planning that you put together, we're going to start the whole process over with you and put you back through it all. I was like, oh man, this is great. So yeah, it does work. Like being able to show what you can do, what it's worth, and all that.
Yeah, and then as you're saying that, like the things that I also talk to everyone about is like, hey, like you said, researching the data centers. Like I researched the company I was interviewing with had a recent acquisition. So I looked up stuff on the company and what it could do with AI, and I would mention in every interview about how I think it could benefit the customer. So it's like something I'm going to throw in the thing, like, hey, with the acquisition of this company, I believe that we can do yada, 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 yada. So.
Exactly. And then some people say like, I know people are going to watch and say, I'm not going to work for free. Like it's, they think that it might be wasted work. Yeah. Let me just talk to that person specifically, that one person. The reality is that it's still my work. I can claim this wherever I go. It might not have worked out in this situation, but guess what worked out? The next place. And they hired me. And they liked what I did so much that they were willing to buy Fortinet equipment just so I could set it up for them because they liked the plan. So just because you feel like it's not going to work here doesn't mean that experience isn't yours. It's yours forever. And you can go ahead and add that to your own price tag if you want, everywhere you go.
Yeah, facts. And like I teach a lot of people, the interviews are building blocks. So what you learn from one interview, take to the next one. So now you've solved either complex problems. Like I've had interviews where I've had to do freaking assessments, freaking like incidents, and I'm taking notes and I write them down. So like, okay, boom. Now somebody else asks me another interview. I say, I'll do this and this and this and this and this. That's why I tell people, record your interviews. I use AI to transcribe everything. AI pulls up the questions I was asked, the ones I was rocking on. I go study them up and I get better at answering them.
Exactly. Yeah, I record my interviews too. Like that's probably why I got the NAS. Like even the practical exercises they got, make sure I go back over it, make my own labs at it, get competent in that. If this is what y'all want. But later on, it's going to pay off somewhere.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure, man. So what are you currently doing?
So my journey did go from being a sysadmin in that position to being like the supervisor of the sysadmins. Then I was a network admin, network engineer, senior network engineer, then senior systems engineer when I got a little bit more Linux experience. Then I moved to another company after that, to this company called Charcuterie Artisans. Great place, great people, loved it all. And I was a systems engineer over there, set up networks the whole time. And it felt like I was working like 24/7 though. That's the only part about it. I worked there for about 9 months and I heard the writing on the wall during that time. I knew that they were going to let me go, not because of anything else, but because they just had to be honest. Like the CFO, like you don't have this, that it gets serious. The CFO pulled me in and said, listen, look it for yourself. This is where we at. I just want you to take this letter of recommendation from all of us. And I want you to know that we appreciate everything, but we can't keep you. From there, I had to, so that was my whole feeling of, oh, wow, like I got laid off. And I was like, all like, yo, maybe I'm gonna have to like do the whole waiting game and all that. But they kept me on for the next 2 weeks of that. So I was looking for a role. I put up the green banner and one of my boys hit me up and was like, I've been waiting for this for a while. We've had a position open. And if they don't hire you, I don't know what they want. So my boy hit me up and was like, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. I was like, what are you talking about? Dude, I just got laid off. He's like, trust me, I want this more than anything. So he hit me up. My last day there was like on the 31st of January. And that day, I got two job offers. I chose to go with the one with my boy, though, just because I knew him. The other one was kind of cool, too. But, you know, I don't like spoiling networks. And I know he put in a lot for it. And also, you know, we vibe a lot together. So we've been working real good together. From there, I moved on to a sysadmin, which sounds like the same as my original role, but different companies have different duties, even with the same title. Titles don't really mean as much, which is why when you said you changed somebody's title to cybersecurity engineer, because that describes the work that they're doing, very true. So even though I'm back to being a sysadmin, I have like 18 more duties that are a lot different than the last time I was doing this work with the same title. And that's where I'm at right now. I'm back to being a sysadmin for this company.
Dope, man. I'm really a goofy guy. I watch too much TV. And so when you was talking about they gave you a letter of recommendation saying they can't keep you, I was like, so basically the job told you, it's not you, it's me.
Exactly what I felt like too. It didn't make it feel any better, to be honest.
Right. So another random question is like, it's been a while since we've seen you on YouTube, man.
Yep.
Like, you're coming back.
Yeah, I'm coming back to it right now. The thing about it is, like, when I first started doing it, I put up that video because at that time I was kind of all alone in my life and I was going through a real tough time. And to be perfectly honest, because I am going to talk about it on my YouTube, and so is my wife, during that time we were planning on separating. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at that time and I was supposed to be going through a divorce. I hadn't had an income in over 4 years. The most money I had ever made, and that was only for 1 year in our whole marriage, was the $20,000+. And so it was a real tough time. During that time, I didn't really have that many friends, didn't have anyone to turn to. I didn't have any network. I didn't know nobody. I was predominantly a stay-at-home dad type of thing. And I'm thinking that my life is going to mess up, but like I'm going to mess up my life. And as sad as it sounds, when I first started in tech, where I got the money to even do all the search and stuff, we had just done our taxes because, you know, it's tax season right now, too. She had put in the taxes. She had written down zero for me, and we filed our taxes jointly. And then I asked her, I was like, you know, can I just take the tax refund? And can you just hold me down for 18 more months? I really got to get myself together. She was like, fine, take it, do whatever you got to do, and then we're done. So that's really where I was at the time. After I passed the certs, at that moment, I had like 3 followers on LinkedIn. So it's like, I didn't have a network or anything. So I was like, what do? I got to talk to somebody. So I turned on the camera. I was like, I'm just going to talk to the internet. I don't know who's going to be here. I don't know who's listening. Hopefully somebody going to see this. And like, yo, like, look out for your boy type of thing. So that's really what it was. I wasn't expecting that many people to see it, to be honest. So when I started looking at my waking up and checking my Gmail and seeing like this person subscribed, this person subscribed, it's like, congratulations, you have 200 views. I was like, 200 views? And then it's like 20 minutes later, congratulations, 500. I was like, what's going on here? So it was, I was setting out to be a YouTuber. I was trying to just find out who's there listening. What can I do? And it just worked well. Now, why did I stop making videos? Because I was a newbie. And I want to make sure that if I'm going to have to say something now, especially since it's actual people listening and impacting lives, I want to make sure that I actually know what I'm talking about. And it's not just like, well, I really don't know what I'm talking about, but here's what I did. And yeah, do whatever you want. Like, nah, I don't want to do that. Can I give a little sidebar with why I don't want to do that too?
No, no. Go, listen, this is the proper platform for it.
So back in the day, for part of what I did, I was a public speaker for a little bit of time, and I worked with a company called SkillPath. So it was really tough for the traveling, but we did a lot of training. Now, mind you, I was speaking just because I was good at speaking, not because I actually knew what I was talking about. This is one time they sent me to a software company to go train them on agile project management. I went there. I knew nothing about it. I read 2 books while I was on the airplane, put together a presentation the night before, woke up in the morning time, presented to them, all these other people that are actually doing the work, by the way. I had never been on a project team. I had never worked in a corporate environment. And here I was presenting about it. And they were listening to me. And they rated me good, too. They gave me a perfect rating and said, we got to have you back. This is going to be great. And they hired me again to do another training. But I looked at that. I was like, I really don't know experientially, I don't really know what I'm talking about. I mean, I'm still going to do it because, I mean, y'all paid me to. But the reality is, like, I don't want to be put in a position again where I'm just talking because I'm good at talking. I want to be able to say I'm talking about this because I actually know what I'm talking about in an intimate way. I've been through a little bit of this. I've seen enough around me to be able to articulate it from a place of knowledge and not just out of a place of articulation. So yeah. That's why I stopped making the YouTube videos. I was like, yo, if I'm going to put something out, it's going to have to be substantial.
No, for sure. But I would probably say that, honestly, the best thing about YouTube is people don't care. Not in a sense of like what you're not saying, but in the sense of they want to see the journey. Like, I always give Day, like, I think I brought up Day today, but like in real time, we saw Day when he was like you 5 years ago in 2020 to now being a security engineer, you know, at a top tech company. And so he's always put his best foot forward, whether he's messed up or not. He's talked about failing exams and stuff like that. But I think that's the level of transparency that keeps people going on a journey, because a lot of people will try to compare their start to somebody who's in year 10, 15, year 20.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Try to compare themselves, like, you know, and this is going to be the same question I ask DeJuan whenever he comes on. They'll try to compare themselves to DeJuan Lightfoot. and he's been at it for a long time, and you cannot compare yourself like to other people. Comparison is a thief for joy. But just seeing other people being raw and honest about different things, and hey, like, I failed this. So, you know what, guys? Let me tell you about imposter syndrome. I don't really know what I'm doing too much, but I must be doing good enough because I'm still there. And because there are videos on it. I think I reacted to a video where I was saying, like, yeah, he kept on dealing with imposter syndrome. And I was like, hey, I deal with it sometimes too, just because I'm doing a different role and just trying to make sure, am I doing what I'm supposed to do? So, but nah. And I also want to give you an update, because I don't know if you looked at it lately, but that video he's talking about now has 85,000 views.
So, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to start YouTubing again. And I don't want to get, you're right, because I don't want to wait too long where I'm no longer a beginner. And this is like, now you're comparing to a 5-year guy and whatnot. Like, so I'm still going to give the entire lowdown with it all. Full transparency with everything too. But yeah. Also, I don't want to get people's hopes up too high either. Like, I do want to, like, okay, so what really nudged me in the direction to want to go back is the whole being laid off, even though it was only for one day. The whole being laid off, I feel like, wow, that was my first real challenge in this entire field. Before that, I felt like I had a real cruising time. Like, I got raises every 3 months. And even since my beginning, I've doubled my salary since then. So, like, I've had a pretty cruising time with not that many hardships. And I feel like I wouldn't be telling the truth of this industry just because I was lucky. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, there's challenges. And I see the challenges. Like, I see my coworkers and what they go through. I've seen other people get fired. I see that. I've seen other people fail exams. I failed 2 so far. and like, if I tell you why I failed those, it's like, well, what were you expecting? So, for example, like, I was taking the AWS, the Solutions Architect one, and my license was going to expire the next day. And you know you need a license to be able to take the exams. So I was like, oh, let me hurry up and take this. I spent 4 hours studying it. What you expect? Like,
exactly.
like, no, you set yourself up for that one, dude. And the other one was like the first part of the LPIC 2. I had just finished taking Epic One. I was like, oh, you know, I feel real comfortable with Linux type of stuff. How much more could there be? And I passed the Epic One pretty highly. So I was like, oh, you know what? If 70% of it is overlapping, I'd pass it. Guess what? 0% of it overlapped. Bro, I turned on the test. I was like, I didn't study for it, but I turned on the test and they're like, when you're rebuilding the Linux kernel, what happens? I was like, why would I ever want to rebuild a Linux kernel? I never even thought about doing that. Like, you don't just buy it, you put it on a flash drive, plug it in. So like with that, what do you expect? Like, you don't prepare, you will fail. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah, man. So I actually want to ask you something because you brought up something, right? And I'm only asking because you mentioned it. And you mentioned like your relationship status at the time. And we hear the saying a lot of times, money can't buy happiness. Do you think, and I'm not saying it's only the money, but do you think that you did see a drastic improvement in your life and your relationship, you know, with your wife or your kids and everyone else once you once you got into tech maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a little bit up and down. The phrase money can't buy happiness, I mean, of course you can't buy happiness if you spend your money on misery, but yo, by the way, write that down. That's kind of fire. Money can't buy happiness if you spend it on misery. But can money buy happiness if you put it in the right places? I do think that it can. And in some ways for me, I do think that it has. So for my life, we have been able to reconnect with each other. We have been able to build a decent amount of trust with each other as well. So that's been pretty good. And the other thing about it is, like, for me and her, if you ever see his vibe, like we just work, like we just get along, and it's really hard for us to be separated. Also, I have very ambitious goals for my children, and not everyone is going to be able to share the goals that I have for my kids. One of them being like my son right now, he's 11 years old and he's already taking college classes and stuff because I want him to be able to have his degree by the time he's 14. And if he gets a part-time job, to be able to start building his experience with no debt from that point on. Mm-hmm. And those are little things like that. You can't just do with anybody. So when it came to like the kids, we were always around each other. We tried the whole, okay, you know, you do a little bit here, I do a little bit there. And that just didn't work because they'd be like, hey, I'm about to take the kids for ice cream. And they're like, oh yeah, we want mommy to come. And then she'd be like, yeah, I want to come too. So we always end up hanging out with each other. And it's not like we were fighting or anything. It's just, I guess life was a little bit hard at the time, but yeah. we've definitely grown from there. We've seen a lot of transformations. We're back together, so that's pretty good, and it's been pretty good, to be honest.
No, that's perfect, man. And that might have been the wrong phrase, right? Because one of the reasons why people like to get into tech is because of, you know, the time people can get back. It's a little bit more flexible. You could. A lot of times, sometimes have a set schedule where you can go to, you know, your son's practice, your daughter's recital, or this or that for the family, date night, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And so I should have just used a little bit more of those things just because of that. Like you find out like money's not everything, but like at least having the money to pay for like what you need is cool and then extra, whatever it is. But now you
can't spend
time and you're not, you know, there'll be sometimes before you can think you can even do something, you may be wasting. You know, you got a lot of people that do a lot of gig work. They spend all day or they do like 40, 50, 60 hours a day, either doing Uber, DoorDash or whatever. And the time they put in that, they could probably be learning how to get into tech and they will make more money than what they're doing now and put less wear and tear on their vehicle.
Yeah.
And do that on the side if they want to, if they just wanted to pay off like, you know, some debt or something like that. So I just said that to like the people who are watching. Like I said, I always make this stuff. It's like not to reach everybody. It's like certain people. Like certain people is like going to identify with that. And I just did an episode with a guy that he teaches people like robotic process, I think automation. I think this was called RPA. And he's talking about how he prefers to work with like possibly people with no experience. Cause you know, it's easy to fill an empty cup as well as husbands. You know, people want to actually do more for their family and stuff like that. And so like,
yeah.
Do find yourself like in a situation where either like you might be down on yourself or just thinking like you can't do anything. Dame's story is just going from nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like for the people who may be young and in their Gen Z, Dame, we're gonna say Dame is Deku from My Hero Academia.
Yep.
Quirkless. And his quirks that he gets his offer one was the trifecta. And now you've seen how he's built out the trifecta with all these different certs, and he's found out he got these different quirks now from the trifecta. And look at Deku with, what is it? It's offer one, right?
Yep.
Yeah, offer one, and he got all these different quirks. So it's like, you can start off from zero. You just got to really get focused in and keep on putting your best foot forward, and you'll eventually get better and get to new things. And now it's not going to be easy. Deku broke fingers trying to control it and trying to do Detroit Smash, realizing, hey, my body can't handle what his can. How can I make my own? How can you make your tech turn to your own? Hey, I can't get 40 certs, but maybe I can get 10. It's all about what you make it. That's what I would say to you.
And that's exactly what it is, still. It's about what you can make it. And really and truly, I know imposter syndrome is a real thing, but my remedy for that has been, am I doing my best? So even if, like, this is not exactly the best that can be done, am I doing the best that I could have done at this moment? And that's all that really matters to me at the moment with that. So whether or not, like, I am an imposter or not in the moment, it's, am I applying myself the best that I can right now with the resources that I'm given?
No, for sure. And when in doubt, you can just turn on some old CT Fletcher and see if you can
push, mother.
Shoot, do that. And that's also something I want to add in too. And Dame and I were talking about that a little bit in the beginning. It's about another way to help you, because I will say, sometimes you may feel like you're such a steep learning curve with getting in, and you're like, I don't know nothing, so I got to learn everything. It's very easy to burn yourself out. And so you're going to have to adapt to some good habits. Like, for one, we sit down all day. So you're going to have to figure out how to keep yourself moving and how to, like, go work out and get some type of exercise, at least 30, 45, 60 minutes, whether it's a day or every 3 days in a week or something like that, to help yourself out. Go get some sunlight. Try to eat better and not just, like, this is really for my night people. Night people start getting the most weight because they work nights. They're not meal prepping. Nothing is open, but like Whataburger or fast food places. Like, my first help desk gig, I was working overnight. Eventually, I gained so much weight because I was eating like a pizza like every other day because I couldn't cook. And the only thing that was open by the time I was like at work was like a pizza. And it would be a medium. And I just started adding on to where I was like, all right, man, you didn't want to size. You gotta stop eating all this pizza, and you gotta cook some food, and you gotta get back in the gym. Whatever you gotta do, you gotta sacrifice it. And you know, a lot of people will say what they can and can't do. Oh, I gotta do this, or my hair. It's like, you make time for what you want to make time for.
Man, you know, this is the help I need. Because, you know, I've been sacrificing my health for the last couple of years, to be honest.
Yeah, trust me. I know. For me, like, straight away, like, I typically work a swing shift. So at first, I was getting off, make sure the kids go to bed and everything, and I was going to the gym late at night. But the con of that was that the kids were getting up like, you know, 6 or 7. So I'm probably not going to sleep till like 2 or 3, 4 sometimes, because I'm wired, because I just got that energy boost that I get from hitting the weights or whatever. So I'm actually getting stuff done at night. But now I'm irritable in the morning because everybody up and like, leave me alone. I don't want to get up. I don't want to take her there. So I was like, okay, what's my sacrifice going to be? Okay, go to sleep earlier. Wake up at 4:30 or 5, get your workout in, and now you're already up before everybody else is. You come back, shower, and help get ready for school and everything else. And that's been much smoother for me with the family versus me trying to be up late at night, going to sleep at 4, getting a little bit of sleep, then trying to sleep again before I start work. And to top it off, trying to sleep again and sometimes having like calls or consultations in between before work, I'm like, bro, I really don't. Hey, can I talk to you tomorrow? I don't feel like talking today. So just kind of find a schedule that works for you. Like, now, if you're single, you can raw dog it. Do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
You got a family, you got to figure out what works for the best of y'all, because like it's tough. Like, pretty much an infant and two like small age kids, 4 and 3, it's a lot.
Whoa, you got 4 and 3, dog?
I just got an 8-month-old, and then the girls are 4 and 3. And the oldest will be 5 in May.
Man. Yo, I got to talk to you more about this, because, yo, I'm struggling with the life balance, dog. Like, for real. I'm trying to get back into working out. And my problem is, like, I'm a little bit arrogant because, like, yo, I know how to train. I know how to work out. All I need is, like, 6 good months. So, if I feel like I can push myself right now, get as out of shape as I want to get, and then if I just, you know, go hard for, like, 5 months, I'll be back. And that's not the right way to think about this at all. We have to try to find a way to build a balance into our lives, because life doesn't stop just because work begins. There has to be a flow and a symmetry with it. And our work should be able to support our lives and not overcome it. So that's good stuff.
Treadmill right there. It's like a gym, like the apartment, but I don't really go to that one. I go to like Anytime. And like I said, I have an app. So now I time my workouts. I say, okay, this is push day, pull day, whatever day. Mm-hmm. At most, it's like for my weights and everything, is like at least I'm like 50 to like 60, 65 minutes. So like really hour five. Nice. And then if I got there early enough, then I could do my 30 minutes on a treadmill while I'm just walking. Like it's literally I'm doing. It takes the least amount of energy to walk. Like if I'm gonna get some cleats so I can actually do sprints outside, but I'll just put the incline on, and it's the easy way. That way I don't come back really munched out because I use all the energy running miles.
See, yo, that's what I'm talking about. You're doing real good with that.
I'm trying. The weight goes up and down sometimes. With both of us, the kids, like, when life gets in the way, nobody meal prep. We eating bad. And so we just like, man, I'm going to eat this. You know, you just got to – I just look at it and say, I want to be in good shape when they get older, and I don't want to be – on a cane and stuff, and I want to be able to enjoy them so they can enjoy me, and you know, going to like amusement parks and stuff like that. So that's kind of what keeps me on the forefront. And just honestly saying, hey, I'm a man, I really don't have any reason to be big and out of shape. Like when I just to the bare bones of it, I don't have any reason for that. It's not like I'm 6'2" where my frame can handle 250. So I gotta do what I gotta do.
Yeah, that's good. Y'all, I promise. Yo, y'all follow me because I'm gonna get back in shape legit for real.
But man, what would be some stuff that you would want to either lead the listeners or the watchers with? Or actually, before I say that, I forgot to ask this. Well, not ask this, but what's something I didn't ask you? Because I know people like, and we might even do a part two of how you come on live with this, because it got so good that I feel like go another hour. I'm talking about, you know, the different skills you learn, what you do at work, far as this, and this, and how you ever did this. I feel like we can do more of that, and I think I'll set it up. I'll set up a part two, guys, for this, so we can actually get into the nuances of that. But because if you want to know about like stuff he's did or did in the past, it's all kind of documented on YouTube. So the last video I think is like a year ago, so you can go check some of that out right there. So you know we're not capping or whatnot, but. What's something I didn't ask you that you thought I would have asked you?
Oh, about labbing. Bro, your labbing's my life. And I remember in your video when you made the review, you said what a person should do at this point is lab it up. So I listened to your review with that, and I was like, you know what? He's right. And that's where I got started next. It's like, yo, I'm going to put a certain things to the side. I'm going to start putting my knowledge to work, and I'm going to really start building out my lab as best as I can. And the reason why I really want to talk about that is because there's a lot of people out here that always ask, how exactly do I get experience with something? And they will make it feel like, you know, your lab is not a real experience. When if you break it down, it is. You're dealing with the real equipment, dealing with real commands, real configurations, real setup, real architecture. All that's real. And I would really want to tell people that they should really invest themselves a lot in the lab portion of anything. Anything that you do learn, you want to go ahead and try it out. Any challenge that you had at work, you want to be able to replicate it by yourself. For me, at one job, you know, they had set up some of the Proxmox stuff, and they had a bunch of things I had no idea about. So I made sure that I found out what exactly was going to be either the trial version of it, the open source version. I went home on the weekends, you know, really hammered it out. Went back to work on Monday. I was like, okay, so here's exactly what we're doing from here on out. But labbing to me is something that is going to, that's where I feel like it's going to pay. That's where I get a lot of my confidence to be able to go into interviews and talk about anything. And for even me to be able to say, hey, even if I don't know today, you give me a week or so, I'll come back with something for you. So lab it up, be comfortable with the whole lab part of it, be comfortable with the struggles that come with it as well. And yeah, that's going to be solid. Unfortunately, I spent way too much money on lab equipment. Like, just let you know, all this, it goes all the way around my room. So.
But you know what, too? What they have now that necessarily you didn't have an abundance of last time, AI.
Yeah. Yo, and that's the thing. Like, AI could put together a plan tailored just for you, which is crazy. Now for me, I got beef with AI, by the way, like serious beef. But my coworker, the one that pulled me onto the job, he's telling me different ways I can work for you. I'm like, yo, that's kind of legit. That's fire. So I mean, all right. So now I got to talk about it. Where my beef come from? So I had done the Azure cert a year. Then I had to renew it. With the renewal, it's not proctored. So in my mind, I was like, you know what? I don't really feel like doing this. I copy and pasted the answers. And then ChatGPT spit out the most elaborate, beautiful sounding stuff. I was like, oh, for real? That's how that works? And I was like, okay, I gave all the answers that ChatGPT gave. ChatGPT got a 28. So it's like, so I'm over here thinking like, oh, wow. Like, I can't believe they said this. Like, I'm thinking it sounds so good that I believe what ChatGPT was saying, even though I was like, for real? So the next day when I had to take it over again, I just took it with what I knew and I passed it with like an 84. So ever since then, I was like, yo, I'm not relying on ChatGPT. But my coworker right now, he does these things where it's like he wants to know how to build a NAS just with Debian, just because he wants to make sure that he can break everything down so that, say you have a mom and pop shop. His goal is to make sure that mom and pop shop, if they don't have to pay any other fees outside of whatever they're paying him, they don't have to. So if they don't have to pay like Synology licensing, or they don't have to get like a Avamar or something like that they can't afford, can he build them a NAS just with Debian? Yo, this dude sat down ChatGPT and had ChatGPT build out an entire project for him to be able to do it. He was able to like give different scenarios and how things work. And ChatGPT would spit out not the answer for stuff, but tell him exactly what needs to be done. And he will go do the configurations. Yo, now this dude got a whole like Debian beer bones NAS running in his house. I'm like, yo, that's fire, bro. I want to do it myself now.
Yeah, man. I know, like yesterday I was using Copilot and I can't use it on my work machine because the Copilot isn't on there, and then I can't use PowerShell on my work machine. But I was like, I wonder if I could at a high level get the AI to make a simple script for me. And it took me 3 tries because I started realizing, hey, you've passed these programming classes before, so you have to be as specific as you are what you want your script to be. That's what you got to be specific for AI. So I had to tell AI, hey, the column's name is this. The row I want to return is this row, and it's going to be named in this column. And it spit it out for me. All I had to do was input my file path, the sheet name, and like some of the other stuff, and it worked perfectly for me. So I was like, man, that's crazy.
Yeah, and I like that too. I'm going to get better at it. Like, I'm a big believer in AI and stuff. I don't believe that's going to take jobs at all, but I do think it's like it's going to make me better at what I do. It's going to amplify me. It's not going to be able to replace me. It's like Batman's belt, for example. You know, Batman throws on his belt. It's not like he forgets karate or anything, but he's a better. Okay, I was going somewhere with it, but
no, I get what you're saying. It's just something that helps him out.
Yeah.
How can the listeners follow you, man?
Oh, for right now, like, yo, hit me up on LinkedIn. Everywhere is HD Mirage, and that's spelled H as in hotel, D as in Delta, Mike Alpha, Romeo Alpha Golf Hotel. Hit me up there. I'm going to start YouTube again, talking about all the things that I've learned over time and some of my best stuff. I'm going to give everything that I have and my best stuff. I'm going to try to make sure that I'm going to clarify things that I've said before, clarify things in my resume. I can look back at stuff and know why it worked and why it didn't work for other people. For example, like, you know, my resume was like well designed and colorful and stuff. And it's like, did it really break all the rules? And I'm gonna have to say, no, it didn't, because it clearly communicated. Though, like, all the design and stuff, it doesn't actually take away from anything, but it also doesn't add. But what really made my resume sell was a clarity of communication of who I was. And that's all that matters. So I could look back at that and say, okay, here's why it worked. Here's what worked with it. And on YouTube, I'm going to make sure that I put out all those things as a guy that's still in touch with the beginner part of me, but also has had enough experience to talk about how things can be or how things are. And in those things, I can't recommend it enough, especially with where I'm at right now. If you get a mentor that can acknowledge you for who you are, which is the biggest part of getting a good mentor, is that they're not trying to impose on you. They're able to assess you as you are. They're able to assess where the field is and say, you know what? I know exactly where you fit in. I'm going to talk more about why mentorship is so important, why having people around you is like a linchpin key to the real part of success, and why those are the things that you want to do as you move forward. I also want to talk about network building for for people that are bad at building networks like me. Like for me, I'm not really good at building connections initially. It takes me a long time. And people that come in my life, they usually stay for a while. But that's not one of the gifts that I have. Like, I can't go to a conference and actually make connections. But exactly how do you build a network while you're on the job and make sure that you always leave on a good note where people want to recommend you? Those are the things I'm going to be talking about on YouTube. But YouTube is going to be the main platform. I might try to rebrand my Instagram, but I don't know. Instagram is not really my favorite place, to be honest.
Really? Why not?
The ease of scrolling and losing track of time. That's why.
Yeah, that's what it's made for. But that was dope, man. Listen, guys, I hope you've been blessed by this conversation like I am. Like, I definitely want to take it in a different thing, but, you know, as they say in church, you got to let the Lord use you.
Yeah.
That's what we got right now. And I really think a lot of people are going to find it insightful. And they're definitely like, yo, when you having them back on? So we're going to do that. I think I actually may want to do something like have people like you, pretty much people who went from like zero to nothing in the last couple of years, and just have a panel of people talking about different things. Live stream. I think that will be very useful for people who are interested in or who just started their journey. But I appreciate everybody for rocking with me. Like, you know, like I always say, let's stay textual. Until next time, we out. Peace.